Hello, everyone. Well, thank you for inviting me and giving me the time to talk a little bit. So just a little background. As you heard, my name is Robert, and I've been on Vashon for 2 years now, this June. I moved from Arizona, lived there for 42 years in the desert. I thought I would see how Moses did in the desert for 40 years. I beat him by 2 years. Then it was unbearable anymore. But I'm originally from Manhattan, from New York City. And I've been studying and teaching breathing for since 1988, so that's almost over 25 years. I came onto the planet not being able to breathe when at birth, so it seems like a bit of a destiny for me. And started learning about it in 1988 when I went to New Zealand to study the Buteyko breathing method. So just briefly, Buteyko is a doctor, Dr. Konstantin Buteyko from Russia. And he became interested in breathing, and mostly became interested in breathing for general health too. And so I work with people who are asthmatic, anxiety-ridden, sleep apnea, insomnia, anything. Dr. Buteyko found that 150 diseases could be helped with breathing. And of course we know it is the breath of life. We start with breath, we end with breath. So if breath is not organized properly inside the body, the rest of the body can't really function properly. It's not just about oxygen, it's about the rhythm, and it is about how everything moves in relationship to breath. So it's easy to work with people in many different realms with the breathing. And so one of the first sayings is you breathe through your mouth as often as you eat through your nose. Easy to remember. Breathe through your mouth as often as you eat through your nose. Probably not too much. The only time you breathe through your mouth is when you may be running for your life. The other piece of that is to be able to pace yourself in your daily activity so that your nose can keep up with your breathing. If you find that you are breathing and hurrying and, I gotta get this done, I gotta get that done, I gotta get this done, then you're really overriding your nervous system. So, there's a whole other line over there. I tend to turn to the left. So I started with the practical. I'm also a movement teacher. But also over the last few years, I've become more interested in the sacred aspects of breathing. So I'm going to open up with a sutra from the Vajnana Bhairava Sutras. Okay, so just if you bear with me in this sutra. Okay. The way of experience begins with a breath, such as the breath you are breathing now. Awakening into luminous reality may dawn in a momentary throb between any two breaths. Exhaling, breath is released and flows out. There is a pulse as it turns to flow in. In that turn, you are empty. Enter that emptiness as the source of life. Inhaling, breath flows in. Filling, nourishing. Just as it turns to flow out, there is a flash of pure joy. Life is renewed. So what they're speaking to here is that when we breathe in and breathe out, which is obviously the flow of life, there's this place when we breathe out where there's an opportunity to rest at the bottom of the breath, where we don't grab for breath, so we can all try that. We breathe in. We breathe out, and there's this place down here where things just sort of open up. If you can follow the movement of it, it just opens up. That is the vastness, that is the emptiness, that is the beginning. What drives breath into the next inhale is the heart's desire to have another breath, if you will. So as you breathe in, and you go to the top, you'll find that it opens up this way. So it opens down this way at the bottom, and it opens up this way at the top. Up here is that flash of pure joy where the mind is open up into the spaciousness of everything right up there. And the only way you can do that is by using the nose for breathing. So we follow that. Can you feel that, some of you? It's a practice. Sometimes it's there for me, sometimes it's not so there for me. So I want to do a little experiential here. So if you put your hands here and here, and just noticing which hand moves first when you breathe in and you breathe out. Mostly when you breathe in. And just notice the effort also. How many have your top hand moving first? Two, three. Okay. The rest of you all feel the bottom hand moving first. A phenomenon, a physics phenomenon of breath, this is in the practical level. And we've all heard this, you know, for basketball players or for dancers or for when you want to jump. You got to go down to go up. Right? You just see people jump, they go down, and then they lift up. Even a cat does that, right? So in keeping your hand in here, what would happen, what happens to the breath and the ease of the breath and how it opens up is just ever so slightly, you release more of your weight into your zafu. Just let the upper body just sort of soften down so that you feel like you are a little bit more on your seat. You can feel your sit bones. Is the next breath bigger or smaller? Let's do the opposite. Lift up where you're just a little bit away from your seat, like you're holding yourself away from your seat just a little bit. Is the breath easy or tighter? And then go back down, still keeping an erect posture, but just letting the support and the zafu be underneath you so that you rest on your seat. Fuller, easier?
Fuller there.
Fuller there.
For me.
Yeah. So breath has two pieces to it. It has the buoyancy of the spaciousness when we're inhaled. Everything opens up in the buoyancy. When we release and exhale, we sort of return to the earth. We're not as heavy, we're not as light from the air. So we return to the earth a little bit. We'll let everything dissolve, all the tensions, the thoughts that come with it. There's this place where the exhale takes us into the dissolve. And so we're melting into the chair, or into the zafu in this particular case. Feel that? It makes breath easier. So when we talk about relaxing, another way of talking about it is to soften so that everything is here, down on the seat. And then that makes this breath a little bit easier. Okay, now, breathing through your nose. Just going to see here too. You can keep your hands here if you want or not, but it's a good idea. So here we are, breathing through our nose. Now we're tracking the state of our nervous system. Relaxed, easy, down at the low numbers, 0, 1, 2, 3, down in there. Anxiety, higher up. Ease of breath and state of nervous system. Now, just open your mouth, take a couple of breaths, special dispensation here in the moment. Take a couple of breaths through your mouth and watch what happens to effort and watch what happens to nervous system. Then go back to nose breathing. We'll go back and forth if you need more time to figure out what's going on in your nervous system. And does it change where you breathe from? When the mouth is open, does it change where you breathe from? Does it come more to the chest? Does it stay in the belly? Yeah. So what happens to your nervous system? Does it stay calm or does it get a little bit of agitated? It gets a little bit agitated. So here's the phenomenon here. You can let your hands go now. This is not going to happen on this island, but if a grizzly bear walked in the front door, what would be the first breath you would take? Right, exactly. And what would that do for you?
Give me a rush of oxygen.
Right, a rush of oxygen, which comes flow through here. This would go on like crazy, right? Your heart would be pounding, and your focus would be right on the bear, would it not? You wouldn't be looking out the window to see if it was raining, see how pretty the trees are. It's like, I'm in the fight or flight right here in this particular moment, and all I can do is pay attention to this bear. Nothing else matters in this particular moment. My life's at stake. So that triggers the fight or flight response. So anytime during the day that I use my mouth for breathing, I just slightly put that into my nervous system. I tell the nervous system that I am on slight alert. So the most important place that most people lose it or aren't able to maintain it is when they are speaking. So if I speak to you and I open my mouth to speak to you, I'm exhaling. This is audible breath. When I'm finished and I follow my little saying there about pacing yourself so I can breathe through my nose all the time, when I run out of air, what do? I close my mouth and I breathe through my nose again. Right? So I keep myself, at least give myself half a chance to stay in my rest and settle or my little quieter time inside me. Because isn't the purpose of life to be rested, not to be working all the time? Most of what goes on today in terms of disease is about, we hear it a lot about stress, right? So what could be more stressful than keeping your body alert on all the time? What could be less restful than we don't have that chance to stay rested? Each breath has built into it this opportunity to rest. Breathe in. Now I can talk to you again. So one of the other phenomenons of this is, let's just try this again as an experience. Koshin mentioned to follow the breath. There's actually something else that happens when you follow the breath, is that your body responds to the breath. It changes volumes, right? So as you breathe in, notice what happens to your body as you breathe in. Follow the breath in and feel the movement in your body. Somewhere, anywhere, skin level, expansions, movement, anywhere. Do you feel that? Do you feel your breath moving? Do you feel your body moving in response? Responsiveness is one of the sure signs of being healthy, is that your body is responsive to stimulus. Let me ask you this question. When you put your attention, when you put your awareness on your breathing, follow it in, and you feel your body move, where are you living in that moment? Where is your experience? Right. When I talk to you, where do you get a sense that my attention is right now? Out here. So here's this play of inner and outer. As I talk to you, I bring my attention to you. When I run out of breath, I bring my attention back to me. And when I get my attention back to me, I rest inside of myself. The words come next. You get a chance to listen, and now I'm speaking to you. So I'm playing back and forth between what's inside of me and what's outside of me. So I never lose that continuity between the inside and the outside when I follow my breath. And what happens to you as I speak to you and I lay out these ideas and then I take some time to rest back inside of myself? What are you doing when I rest back inside of myself? You're resting back inside of yourself, are you not? So you're listening. So I'm being kind to you in that way to give you a rest. So that you don't have to listen to everything I say all at once. Nice little play. The other purpose of this play back and forth is that I am actually harvesting something. I am harvesting my carbon dioxide. This is what the Buteyko method and most of science about breath is built on. This is the more practical scientific. Carbon dioxide gets a very bad rap in this culture and in most cultures. What is it labeled? How is it labeled? Huh? Poison? It is a poison. It is. But we're in with the good, out with the bad, right? So all these... Take a deep breath. The truth is, as it is a poison, it is also the regulator of the distribution of oxygen throughout your body. So if you get rid of too much carbon dioxide, what happens to the oxygen flow? It starts to decrease. And so you become oxygen starved in some of your cells. And as a result of that, you have a tremendous amount of internal stress. The body is undernourished because it's not receiving its full complement of oxygen. The first place that shows the signs of not enough oxygen when somebody is using their mouth for breathing too much is they begin to faint. Do they not? Have you seen people hyperventilate? And what do they use to bring them back from hyperventilating and from fainting? Huh? Paper bag. Right. What are they doing when they breathe in and out of that paper bag? They're breathing back their own carbon dioxide. So when they bring back their own carbon dioxide, oxygen starts to flow again and their brain starts to wake up again. Otherwise, they're fainting so they don't kill themselves by hyperventilating. And the reason we do breathe is because at a certain point the carbon dioxide levels rise to a certain level. Our brain reads that level and says, any higher, it's a poison. So it initiates the breath. It's not oxygen that initiates the breath, it's carbon dioxide that initiates the breath. So if we give out too much of it, we walk around internally stressed, internally starved, and therefore stressed and unable to tolerate external stress. So we do that less. Fully complemented, relaxed inside of your breathing, full complement of oxygen, easier to deal with stress on the outside. So what happens for carbon dioxide, what happens for people who are asthmatic, for instance, and why this works so well for asthmatics? Are there any asthmatics who want to admit to it in the room? So carbon dioxide is a bronchial and vasodilator. It opens the airways. Asthmatics tend to breathe 2 to 3 times faster than anybody else. So what are you giving off 2 to 3 times faster than anybody else? The carbon dioxide. As a result, those little airways tighten up because they don't have carbon dioxide. So in the Buteyko method, all we do is to teach you how to harvest your carbon dioxide, re-regulate your breathing so that that little carbon dioxide will open up the airways. So instead of using an inhaler, Buteyko had developed some methods using your own breathing to get your airways to come back open. Same thing with sleep apnea. Sleep apnea, bigger than ever, is because people are stressed during the day. Their breathing is stressed during the day. Takes it into the sleeping at night. So they go stressed in their breathing at night. Breathing too fast pulls the airways together. As well as, some of you already experienced this probably, holding your breath during the day. Anybody catch themselves holding their breath? Holding the breath means stopping movement. That's basically what you're doing. You stop the movement. You want to isolate the moment in time so you can either think about it more clearly or do something. But that stopping your breath and holding it throughout periodically throughout the day builds up a breathing pattern that happens at night. Then you have sleep apnea because you've been holding your breath during the day, and so now you're going to hold it at night whether you're conscious of it or not. Same thing with insomnia. With anxiety, you just saw how that happens. People keep their anxiety levels real high by the way they use their breath. Any questions about any of that right now?
I have one.
Yes.
I was thinking about swimming.
Yes, I'm a swimmer as well.
And how you must breathe out of your mouth. And I know that at the end of like a sprint or something like that, that is important to get the carbon dioxide out. So it seems.
Yeah, that's a lot of misinformation.
Okay.
There was just a report in talking about how swimmers endanger their lives by hyperventilating before they get up on the docks and they blow out all that carbon dioxide so they can stay underwater later. They can become desensitized to carbon dioxide and they can cause their own death. I don't know if you're a little younger than I am, I think. And do you remember Alexander Popov? Alexander Popov was the Russian rocket. And he used to do Buteyko. Everybody else would be on the starting blocks. Everybody else would be hyperventilating. Like he'd be sitting there nice and quiet, really quiet in his breathing, just very quiet in his breathing. And all swimmers would dive in the water for the 50-meter freestyle or the 100, and he would stay under the water much longer than anybody. There's no friction under the water. He would almost stay to the end of the pool under the water, and he would always win. No matter how fast they were swimming on top, he was swimming faster underneath. So they changed the rules in swimming, and they put a line down there and said everybody has to come up at the same time. So, and Russian astronauts use it also, and they found that lost less calcium than anybody else. So I have pictures of swimmers, nose breathing. You have to really slow down in your breathing to not let that water jam up against the water bubbles. But also, I have a picture here on my phone. The fastest woman in the world at 440 meters is a complete nose breather. And you watch her, it's as smooth and as easy as she can be. Never opens her mouth for 440 meters. She did this method. So the truth, you must breathe through your mouth while you swim? Not so. Right? It takes a lot to learn it, though. And I'm lazy, too. So I don't do it, but when I feel like I've hyperventilated myself enough, I just go on my back and swim on my back for a while, and then nose breathe while I'm on my back and resettle myself back down again. All right?
I remember seeing the woman, black woman, who was in the Olympics, I think it was. And it was I had met you, it was, I met you after I saw her, and I was struck. I mean, it was so noticeable that she didn't open her mouth mm-hmm. during the 100 meter dash. Was
440 yards, quarter mile. 440, quarter mile.
Yeah, she looked so poised.
And smooth, because she's in, you know, you do your walking meditation, and that's what she's basically doing. She's meditating on her breath while she runs, and her running is totally coordinated with her capacity to breathe. She's not over-breathing. She's fully oxygenated. She feels that movement, and that movement, what is the power source of our body? The power source of our body is our breath. So she feels into, I know this experience, she feels what's available in power in her breath, and then just moves as fast as she can in relationship to how much power she has. So she's trained herself to increase that power. So when I swim, I can feel that, and you play in exercise, you play with the speed and the form. As long as you can hold breath and as long as you can hold form, that's as fast as you can go. If you start losing form and breath, then you back down and you keep increasing that capacity. Okay, yeah, so thanks for the question. All right, here's another little experiential. There's two syllabus. This comes out of the Radiant Sutras too, and they're called the Ha and Sa. So we'll take off any meaning about them. But I'd like you to do this. I'd like you, when you breathe, the instruction is to breathe through your nose. So as you breathe, how many of you are actually breathing through your nose as opposed to breathing into your nose? So just take a moment to take a couple of breaths. Are you breathing into your nose or are you breathing through your nose?
Sure if I can tell the difference.
Okay. One would be that you'd feel a volume increase in here, like the nose would sort of swell a little bit. The other is it would just be no resistance and it would pass right through.
One thing I notice is because I was taught to expand my belly when breathing, sitting, breathing. When I have my attention on my belly, then it feels like it comes through.
Okay.
Rather than attention on the nose.
Great. How many else feel that? Or how many else notice that they breathe into the nose? Do you feel it in the belly?
I always feel that it's my lungs like an accordion. It's like an accordion.
Feel that it's deeper within the nose where if you look at a
sinuses.
Yeah, the sinuses right. Is back in the sinuses rather than the tip of the nose. It's more full.
Okay, so just a couple more things. So when you just try this is for most people. A lot of people you talk to about saying, can you breathe through your nose? They go, I can't get enough air. See, I can't get enough air. So if you do that, you can feel the nose pulls together. You're pulling the nose together. So if you just take a moment to breathe through into your nose. Not hard, just and feel what happens here. Does this expand or does this tighten? Tightens, right. So everybody who's trying to get more air by breathing through the nose is actually making this smaller as opposed to opening it up. So yes, breathing through the belly, but how about if you just in your mind's eye, not verbally, just say the syllable ha when you breathe in and sa when you breathe out and see if you don't open for the air. And there's less effort. So here's your body breathing you. Because your lungs are pulling the air through. And you can sort of relax knowing that the lungs are in charge and they're going to pull as much air as they need. It's not up to you to determine how much air the lungs need. The lungs will determine how much air they need. Because most people who overbreathe can't breathe any more into the lungs because the lungs are full of air. Can you feel that? Can you get a sense of that? Stephen, yeah? It feels really good to me, and it also feels that I get more air in the back of my body than I do in the front of my body. You can feel that? And the reason that is because there's more lung in the back than there is in the front. So most people who are trying to get air in the front are always doing this. It's not where it's coming from. It's coming from the back. So doing the ha and sa, just as a training to see how it feels to go through, you can do it without that, but... because the lung, the ribs have to open up from the back. They don't open up from the front. They rise up from the back, and you feel them rising up from the front, but the joints of the ribs are along the spine. That's where they have to articulate and have to move. So if you can feel yourself breathing from the back and the low back, that's the most capacity for breath.
Does the tongue play a role?
Very much so. Thank you. Where's everybody's tongue? Somebody speak for everybody.
Roof of the mouth.
Roof of the mouth. Yeah, so great. So we could go, there's so many traditions. If you look at the Taoist tradition, earth, sky energy comes down, lands on the roof of the mouth. Earth energy comes up, lands on the roof of the mouth. Putting the tongue on the roof of the mouth marries the energy, so you create a cycle of energy through the body. Putting the tongue on the roof of the mouth takes the epiglottis and moves it away from the windpipe so that the windpipe can have more room, or the trachea. I don't know why I called it a windpipe. It's not a windpipe, it's a snake. It's actually very curvy in there. So see if you put the tongue at the bottom of your mouth or away from the top, what that feels like to breathe. Do you feel the sense of completion in your body? And do you feel like it's harder to breathe through? Yeah. So put the tongue back up there. Feel that rise up, and also just feel the marriage of the energy so that it circles in what they call a microcosmic circuit. So hit the last piece. This piece is something that I play with. It's in the sutras itself. But if we look at the four aspects of heart, body, mind, spirit. Okay, can we do that? When breath comes into the body, this is the highest place that I can get with it, is that as we look at all, you know, cosmologies, breath is the thing that animates humans. So the cycle of breath is a cycle of life and death. We don't know if we're going to breathe in another breath after the breath we just breathed. It's an assumption. It's taking it for granted that there's going to be a breath after the one you just breathed out. Not necessarily so. We hope that so. We desire it. But we don't know if it's going to be true. We could have an aneurysm, a heart attack, we don't know. That may be the last breath you ever took. So each breath is a symbol of the life and cycle. When we breathe in, you can feel you're taking in spirit, the breath in the spirit, and body is here alive now. This is the moment of my life right here. My inhale is the moment of my life. As I reach the top, that spaciousness, my mind is able to go out into the universal mind. I'm no longer attached to this particularly, I'm actually more open to the universal. As I begin to breathe out, my spirit is returning to something greater than this particular moment in here. It's leaving. Life force is on the way out, this particular breath. As I land at the bottom of the vastness, what is it that drives the next breath? It's a desire of the heart to have another breath. So there are all four things in the cycle of breath. Come into my body, into my mind, back into my spirit, and my heart's desire to breathe again. So close your eyes again. I will read to you a little bit as I finish. The life essence carries its play through the pulsing rhythm of outward and inward movement. This is the ceaseless throb, the rhythm of life. Terrifying in its eternity, exquisite in its constancy. The inhalation, the return movement of breath, sustains life. The outgoing breath purifies life. These are the two poles between which respiration goes on unceasingly. Between them is every delight you could desire. Even when the senses are turned outward, your attention on the external world, attend also to the inner throb, the pulsing of the creative impulse within you. Enter these turning points where the rhythm of life transforms into each other. Breath flows in, filling, filling. In this moment, drink eternity. Breath flows out, emptying, emptying, offering itself to infinity. Cherish these moments. Mind dissolves into heart. Heart dissolves into space. Body becomes a vibrating field, pulsating between fullness and emptiness. At the end of the exhale, breath surrenders to quietude. For a moment, you hang in the balance, suspended in the fertile spaciousness that is the source of breath. At the end of the inhale, filled with the song of breath, there is a moment when you are simply holding the tender mystery. In these interludes, experience opens into exquisite vastness, with no beginning and no end. Embrace this infinity without reservation. You are its vessel. Thank you. Any last minute questions? Anything you'd like to know scientifically, particularly in terms of health, in terms of the movement of breath? Yeah.
Do you consciously pause at the top and pause at the bottom?
No, I don't pause at the top. It's a turnover.
Okay.
I pause at the bottom, not so much consciously. In the Buteyko breathing method, what happens when you are retraining your breathing method to balance the respiratory gases so that they are appropriate? The way I like to speak about that is we see what's happening when the gases in the air are getting unbalanced, right? We have all this climate change, right? Same thing in here. When the gases are unbalanced, we have internal climate change. The atmosphere in terms of our body begins to get disrupted. So when we harvest the right balance between carbon dioxide and nitrogen, there becomes a natural pause at the bottom of the breath, where you are waiting for the impulse that the body says, I don't need to breathe right now. The gases are working. Oxygen is exchanging with carbon dioxide. At a certain point, the meters in the body say, now it's time to breathe again. So the more balanced my respiratory gases are, the longer cycles the breath are. So in yoga, when you're really relaxed in the body, see, tension in the body is what drives breathing, because tension needs energy. The form of energy that we make in our body, the only way we can make that energy is through that molecule of oxygen. So when we have enough oxygen and we're making enough energy and not expending it on tension, which is energy to keep everything tight, which means it's an oxygen gobbler, it just uses up all our oxygen, the body's totally relaxed, and the gases have relaxed the body, we don't need to breathe as much. So yoga's 4 to 6 breaths a minute. Buteyko is no more than 12 breaths per minute, and Western medicine goes at 18 breaths per minute, which, you know, from the Buteyko viewpoint is a little fast. Asthmatics tend to breathe 20 to 30 breaths per minute. So you can see with somebody coming from Buteyko who is a severe asthmatic breathing so many breaths per minute, to bring them back down to 12, they have to really work to re-register all their blood gases, so they're not having to regulate it. The body's self-regulating. Yeah, but at the top, it's a turnover. I know yoga does that. They're looking to increase the capacity of the lung and the volume of the lung. But for asthmatics, very particularly, the reason we don't do it up there is because their lungs are already overexpanded. And when you overexpand the lung, you're using its elasticity, and over time it loses its elasticity, and that's where COPD sets in, where they get obstructive pulmonary disease.
The question about the asthma part of this is that, because I do breathe extremely fast,
right,
and I've had asthma my whole life,
mm-hmm,
but are you trying to slow down? And I guess I'm wondering what comes first. I mean, if you're breathing fast because you have a problem, how do you slow that breathing down if the very problem is that, like, the problem is causing you to breathe too fast? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
sure.
I hear the question. The question is, well, I'll ask you back a question.
Yeah.
When you're breathing really fast, are you using your mouth or your nose for breathing?
I'm sure I'm using my mouth.
That's the first step.
Okay.
If I get you to breathe through your nose and get you to just your nose breathing, that will automatically slow you down.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the process, I get you to start to pay attention to the movement of your breath.
Mm-hmm.
That will also slow you down. If you're tracking movement, as soon as your body and your attention goes to movement, the body says, well, if you want to see the movement, then I'll slow it down for you so you can see it. It won't go that fast.
So you're saying that this kind of a training could get your body to slow your breath rate even though you have asthma.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that when your breath rate is slowed down, that's meaning also because your respiratory gases are balanced, mm-hmm. then you won't, then it's not a cure,
mm-hmm.
but asthma goes away. I had asthma from the time I was 13 until I learned this method, and I don't have it anymore.
Oh.
And my daughter, who was hospitalized many times, no longer has it either.
Oh.
So, not a cure. It's nothing we can say that way in terms of the medical profession, but it does. I've worked with people who have had asthma for 40, 50 years and been on inhalers since they were a kid, and they're completely finished with their medications. So it does work. That's why I like it.
Because it definitely seems that breathing fast inhibits you from doing a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because if you're already breathing 20, 30 breaths a minute, like you, there's nowhere to go. Like if you want to work out, like you're already breathing as fast as you can possibly breathe. And so there's no...
Well, it's also, it's completely debilitating your energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It wears you out. You're tired all the time. And most asthmatics only sleep about 4 hours a night because they, you know, body needs the rest, but then starts back into its breathing pattern. Usually around 4 o'clock in the morning.
We'll have to talk after this.
Yeah, the three most common places for asthmatics to have attacks are laughing,
mm-hmm.
taking a shower,
mm-hmm.
and 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Three most common places for anxiety attacks: watching television, driving a car. Okay, what's the third one? It's not coming. Watching television, driving a car. Oh, and getting ready to go on vacation. I didn't say being on vacation. It's getting ready to go on vacation. Yeah, we see that, you know, we see the breathing problems. I mean, what are they coming? What is the, you know, snoring, sleep apnea? We're just seeing it. I mean, the political ramifications of all of this are all of us humans who are totally suffering in our breathing are trying to tell the powers that be it's not going in the right direction. Because it has nothing really to do with the dysfunction in you. That has more to do with the dysfunction in the context of which we live in. And we think our lives have to run in that drives something that destroys our breathing. We are the canaries in the coal mine right now. Yes?
What about narrow palate?
Yes, yeah, so narrow palate, it's interesting about that. I have pictures at home in the office. Mouth breathing destroys the palate. It takes the whole mouth and makes it narrow, brings the jaw back. And so children who are mouth breathing deform their face and their teeth for that. And you can correct that. There's a whole new field called oral facial myology that works with people in terms of how they use their tongue to properly, especially children, and how to nose breathe. So that what's happening is the narrow palate doesn't let the teeth grow in, so they all come in crooked. So mouth breathing destroys children's faces. Okay, sure.
Afterwards, we got to call it quits.
All right, good. All right.
But Robert will be here for a few minutes, I hope.
Yep, I'll stay. Hang on. I'll have tea downstairs.
Downstairs. We're going downstairs, people. We'll be breathing here every morning, Monday through Friday. And Wednesday evening, we do some breathing too. And then we do some discussing. Opening our mouths and then closing them. And we're now discussing Everyday Zen, Joko Beck's, and it's been very nice to kind of learn about each other and discuss that Zen text. Next Sunday, we will be meeting, even though it's July 4th. And the following Sunday, Nomon Tim Burnett, a friend of mine who runs a Zen Center in Bellingham, coming down to give a talk. Hope you can make it for that as well. Anybody else have an announcement? Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, Kosh.
A couple of things. There are still some openings for the July 11th Buddha's House Sit. So if you would like to go online, go to the Zen Center homepage, and you can register there. It's going to be wonderful. Don't miss it if you can.
And the teacher is coming from Seattle for that. He and I are going to take questions afterwards, but he's going to give the Dharma talk. That's Jeff Kelly,
right.
Friend of the Sanghas.
The second thing is our board president, Elizabeth Fitterer, is in California, and she asked me to honor, what we usually do is honor our outgoing board members. And in this case, Stephen Black is our outgoing board member, and Elizabeth has, or somebody has, instituted a honoring by writing a haiku. I hope some of you wrote a haiku for Stephen. I did. Well, I'll read Elizabeth first. She sent it to me. Black car, black thoughts, stop! The sound of one hand clapping fills the zendo walls. Fills the zendo walls. Black car, black thoughts, stop. The sound of one hand clapping fills the zendo walls. From we sort of riffed off each other. This is mine. Black, designer, true. Black, accomplished, pilgrim, strong. Ring out, bold chanter.
Thank you, Kaj, and thank
David,
you.
David has
to
Stephen is hope. Feathers perched in the soul. Song of Zazen. Stephen is hope. Feathers perched in the soul. Song of Zazen.
Anybody else?
That's it. But I would like to thank Stephen for his service on the board of directors. Really, we both Stephen and Beth, who we thanked last week, are both outgoing. And this board of directors has been so harmonious, really, and hardworking. We've got so much done. It's remarkable, isn't it, Beth? I just want to thank the both of you from the bottom of my heart. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. The last thing I want to say is, if you're new, there's a sign-up sheet out there that you can, a book you can sign up for our emails with, if you'd like. I don't think they're too annoying. Whether you sign there or not, please come downstairs, have a little bit of coffee and socializing. We're going to go downstairs.
Right.
Right now. Okay, thanks a lot.